Hello, everybody, and welcome to Play Ball with Dan Hirschberg. So happy to be here on this podcast. And I do have a very special guest today, Mr. Ken Carson. And one of those guys, maybe you don't know who he is, but behind the scenes, between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Toronto Blue Jays, he was the man for many, many years. Thank you so much for coming, Ken.
Dan, it's my pleasure.
So let's talk about your career a little bit. Fill the audience on a little bit on your background.
Well, I was born in Canada, and I was obviously a hockey player. My brother, he was a teammate of mine, hit me in the head with a puck when I was, trying to block the goalie. Mm-hmm. And so I fractured my skull. In fact, he got a hole in my head there right now. And so I couldn't play anymore. So, I wanted to stay in the game. So I was very fortunate that in Barrie, Ontario, that we were a farm team of the Boston Bruins. And they had sent a trainer there to look after the junior team there. And lo and behold, about halfway through the season, he got called up to the Boston Bruins. And his name is Buddy LaRue. In fact, he ended up owning part of the Bruins after a while, and the Red Sox too. But anyway, so they asked me if I would sort of take over, and so I did a quick study, shall I say? And there was also another trainer around at the same time, Harry Partridge, and so I really fell in love with being a trainer, the training part of sports, and went to school to become certified, and spent 4 years in Barrie, 4 years in Niagara Falls, and I was junior hockey. That's like probably Double A and baseball. And then went to the Rochester Americans for 2 years, and after that with the NHL expansion in 1966, they expanded from 6 teams to 12 teams, and I was fortunate enough to get interviewed and get the job with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I was a Pittsburgh Penguins first trainer in 1966, and then when the Toronto Blue Jays came into the Major League Baseball in 1977 with the Seattle Mariners, they approached me, and the Blue Jays didn't ask me if I'd be interested, and I said, "Nah, I don't really know too much about baseball. Hockey had been my whole career, and so anyway, I turned the job down actually 8 to 10 times, and finally I said, "Well, I talked it over with my family, and thought we'd give it a chance, mm-hmm. give it a shot," and I found out later that. I was only one of 7 people that the Blue Jays could have hired, because you had to be Canadian and you had to be licensed, you had to be certified. And I didn't know that at the time, or I would have held out for more money. But so I accepted that job, and it was really, one of the best moves I ever made. So I was their first trainer along with the Penguins' first trainer, so that's pretty special to me. And
so two expansion teams,
right
there, yep. From the start.
Yep, right from the get go. So that was pretty special. And then so I was with the Blue Jays for 40 years. Started out as their trainer, and then they added on another job with me. I was a traveling secretary, and so I did dual work. And I was the only trainer for the first year. I didn't have an assistant or anything. So, and I also did the traveling secretary part for the time I was there. Now I think they have 13 or 14 people doing that same same job. Yeah. So anyway, that's really, I was with the Blue Jays for 40 years, and then I finished my career as president of the Florida State League, retired 5 years ago.
Yeah, wow. So let's just go back a little bit with your transition from hockey to baseball. It sounded like you were hesitant to make that move. Why was that?
Well, because, you know, I didn't know about the injuries, you know, and then I got to thinking, you know, an injury is an injury. Like in hockey, we had a lot of cuts, mm-hmm. and a lot of knee injuries. And in baseball, obviously, you know, with the pitchers and that, you got elbows and shoulders. But, you know, that was all part of being a trainer, you know, when you grew up. Taking tests and passing certification and that sort of thing. So when I got there with the Blue Jays, you know, it just like it fit in like inside of spring training, probably 2-3 weeks, and the players helped me a lot. You know, Bill mm-hmm. Singer, who was he had been a pitcher with the Dodgers for a number of years. He helped me so much from the pitcher's standpoint. On you know what to expect and this and that, and so it didn't take me long to you know fit in with the new injuries and so that's why I was hesitant.
Gotcha. Yeah. Were you a baseball fan? I mean, obviously you're a hockey fan. I mean, it was
not really.
Being
a Canadian, no, I was not. You know, everything's hockey up there, but no, not really. And baseball is such that it's the toughest sport that I've ever been around to know, to learn things. I mean, I'm still learning things after 40, 50 years, and it's a real tough sport. And like I said, the players helped me a lot and understand the game. I would ask questions, you know, right up till the time I retired, really. So there's always something new mm-hmm. that you can learn.
Did any of the players kind of tease you or trick you with?
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah, they, I remember in first year in spring training in '77, one of the players had a snuff can in his back pocket, and in hockey we never had snuff. So I said, "What's that in your pocket there?" He says, "Well, that's actually a hockey puck, and we're doing this. We're all carrying hockey pucks around in our back pocket just to make you feel at home." And I believed that for a while. And then, you know, they sent me out to get the key to the batter's box and things like that. So, but you know, in hindsight, you look at that, they must have liked me, or they wouldn't have joked around with. Because we used to do that with new people in hockey too.
Yeah.
Send them out to buy 50 feet of blue line and stuff like that. So, sports is really it's really special, and I wouldn't change my life for anything. It's just been outstanding part of my life.
Oh, an amazing run. Getting back to the Penguins, so you were a trainer at that point when still most players did not wear helmets, if any. The goalie for Pittsburgh, if I recall, did not wear a mask, which is
Andy
crazy.
Brown was Andy Brown was the last goaltender that did not wear a mask. And when I left in 77 to go to the Blue Jays, I think we had like seven players that wore helmets, but you know nobody ever. I think there was a lot more respect in the game at that time. Like nobody carried their sticks high because you know you didn't have the protection of the helmet, and nobody carried their sticks high. Everybody hit clean. The odd time a stick would get loose and you'd get cuts, but we'd just stitch them up. And you see Slapshot there, the hot movie Slapshot, where they were stitching them up right on the bench. I did that too.
Right on the bench?
Right on the bench, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Was there ever a time where Brown got the puck hit him in the head or something where you're really like, oh my God?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that you know. In fact, the only concussion protocol we had at that time, and I remember saying this to Andy, he got hit in the head one time with the puck, and I went out and I said, you know, who's the president of the United States? And he says, I don't know, I'm Canadian. So, so I said, oh, that's a good answer. Yeah, that's good. That was our concussion protocol in those days.
Yeah. Wow. So now you had a sort of unique, I don't know, call it a feather in your cap or whatever, but you were involved with two All-Star games in two sports. So NHL and obviously MLB.
Right. In 1976, I was the trainer for the East Division in the National Hockey League. And in 1980, I was the trainer for the American League at the All-Star Game for Major League Baseball in Los Angeles. And from what I understand, there was only two people that have been in two different All-Star Games in two different professional sports, and it was Bo Jackson and myself. And
pretty good company.
And I was first. Yeah, I was before him. So, yeah, that's pretty special too. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like I said, it's just been a great ride for me, and I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah. So at some point, well, you're the trainer, and then they say, okay, we want you to be the traveling secretary. First of all, for those people out here who have no idea what a traveling secretary does, and it's a lot of work, can you explain what you did?
Yeah, well, the traveling secretary looks after all the travel, you know, airplanes, buses, equipment, trucks, and hotel rooms, and you really do most of that in the off season. Mm-hmm. That's all done in the off season, and you know, during the season you don't have really too much to do. You just verify everything, you know, and send rooming lists into the hotels and double check on the buses and you know, the planes were very easy, you know. So it was, like I said, it was mostly all done in the off season at the winter meetings mostly, and then during the season you just sort of verified everything. And being the trainer and the traveling secretary, it was pretty good, because if somebody give you a hard time in the training room, well, when you got to the hotel, you put them by the elevator, you know. So, you know, there's always a way to get back at people, you know, jokingly, of course, obviously.
Yeah. That's funny. So you wrote a book. It's called From Hockey to Baseball. I kept them in stitches, and you got some funny stories, but you also kept people in stitches. What was the idea behind the book, and why did you decide to do that?
Well, a lot of people thought I should, because of number one, being in two sports, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you're in the locker room all the time, you do have some great stories, and you know, and as it turned out with me, with two major league sports, it was even double the fun, as they say. Mm-hmm. and the pleasure, and so it was something that I wanted to do. And the funny story, the first time I started this, I spent a couple of years writing the book, and then the people in Toronto came down, and the IT people came down, and they changed my computer. And lo and behold, I lost everything that I had done. And I was ready to just give up, because, I lost everything that I had, you know, kept track of and had in the book and that. And so I was ready to give up. And my wife, Lily, and she said, "No, that ain't going to happen." You know, I don't think she used the word "ain't," but she says, and she literally locked me in my office for another year. Not all at once. She let me out for dinner, mm-hmm. but I'm glad she did that. And so I think I may have forgotten a lot of stuff the second time, mm-hmm. but it's still a good read, I think. And you know, maybe sometime I'll do a sequel. Because I know I did forget a lot of stuff that I had in the first original that I had forgotten to put in the second one. So it was fun doing, and it's a good read, I think, and it's something that I'm glad I did.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you're not the only one who's ever lost material. I mean, the first book I ever did was a biography on Phil Rizzuto.
Oh, dear.
And same thing happened to me. So I don't know what I did, but I hit a button, and next thing I know, all this stuff was gone.
Oh, oh.
And basically, I just like freaked out first, and then I like said, okay, I got to remember as much as I can, and I just started pounding away for probably two or three weeks, and kind of caught up. But
good.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta keep plugging in. You got a good wife that that kept you moving there.
Yes.
And speaking of your wife, Lillian, who's in the studio here, listening in, you guys got married in kind of a funky situation, right?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we got married at Rogers Center. It was Sky Dome at the time, and we got married before a Yankee Blue Jay game on the field. And we had 44,000 of our best friends sitting in the stands, and none of them give gifts, but you know, that's okay. But yeah, that was pretty special, and we had a 3-day party there, whole weekend there, and the Blue Jays were very, very cooperative and helpful, and they did everything for us. And Paul Beeston, he said, "We're going to do this," and he said, and as it turned out, we were the first ones that ever did this, and I think we'll be the only ones, because they once we did it, everybody wanted to do it.
Sure.
And they said no, this was a special thing, so and it was a special day for us.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. And speaking of Lillian, when you were the Florida State League, you were telling me once there was a big brouhaha, and you actually incorporated your wife to help you sift through all the action on video and everything else.
It was a bench clearing, which in baseball doesn't happen that often, where there's punches thrown. I mean, there's a lot of bench clearings, but everybody just sort of dances around and waltzes. But this one was in Daytona, and it was a bad one. Yeah, there was punches thrown. Helmets thrown, so I had a pretty tough job to do disciplinary wise. So you know, there's going to be suspensions, obviously, and so Lillian and I, we sat there and went through. There was actually a fan that had videoed the whole thing, which was really great. Mm. And so we spent a couple days actually looking through. Everything okay? We got to get this guy here. He's, you know, he backed off. He didn't have anything to do with it. And we went through the whole fight, bench clearing fight, brawl. And so when it was all said and done, we chit chatted and come up with who was instigators, who wasn't, and I did the appropriate action. Fining and suspended, and the good thing about that whole thing was, both teams. It was the Daytona Club. They were Cincinnati, and I forget who the other club was, but both of the farm directors and the club ownership and all that. They supported everything that I did, suspension wise. So that was good. It was good that, but it was pretty hectic there for a while.
Pretty hectic, huh? Now you also were part of two world championships, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about that. That must have been exciting.
Yes, actually, you know, let me back up a little bit too. In '85, 7 years after we were in the league, we won the American League Division, and that was really special. Beat the Yankees the last weekend of the season. And that's never been done before that quick. We're a team, an expansion team, has won a division that quickly. And then obviously in 92, 93, that was really something and special. And, you know, not only for the city of Toronto, but the country of Canada, you know, that they, because we, you know, Toronto was the only, they represented Canada as well as Toronto. And then this year, I thought they were going to do it again. And it was a great World Series, as you know, Dan. And we really felt like we were going to do it again. But they got a good good young team, and I think a lot of these players are going to be around for a long time. So I hope that they can get back and win it again, put two, three seasons together where, like we did in 92 and 93, because that really was special.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, the team just didn't get those all the breaks in those last two games went the Dodgers' way. I mean, with the ball stuck in the outfield, and you know, as a former Blue Jay and a fan, you know, you must have been like cringing at these things.
I did throw a few things at the TV, but you know, the Dodgers were a good team too, you know, and
sure.
They were defending champions, and that stuff happens. I mean, you know, you just have to move on and you know, continue on and do the best you can. And I think the Blue Jays did that. I think everybody should be very proud of them.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, they kind of that they represent Canada. From that viewpoint, what is that like? Kind of like you're the team, you're represent not just Toronto, like you said, the whole country. I mean,
well, I think it wasn't like that, you know, when we first came into the league in 77. I think it took some time, and credit to our front office. They, you know, they had caravans all across Canada, and they still do, you know, mm-hmm. after 50, this is going to be our 50th year coming up. And they still do that. They do caravans across Canada, so it's very easy to you know, to fall in love with a team like that and accept them as your team, and you know, like the people in Vancouver, they're only like 90 miles away from Seattle, you know. So and that's when we play in Seattle, there the people from Western Canada, they would come down there, and there'd be sometimes there'd be more Canadian fans there than there would be Seattle fans, or Toronto fans. When they come down there, there'd be more of them than the Seattle fans. So, they still work at it. The front office still works at it. So, and it's great. I mean, you know, right from all across the country.
Well, I know they've got a lot of fans in Dunedin, that's for sure.
Yes.
Well, listen, Ken, thanks so much for coming. If you can find that book, From Hockey to Baseball, I Kept Them in Stitches by Ken Carson. It's a fun read, and obviously you'll hear a lot more read a lot more great stories. I want to thank everybody for joining me on Play Ball with Dan Hirschberg. If you're on Facebook, I have a Facebook page, Danny Baseball 56. Thanks again for coming to the airwaves with us, and we'll see you soon.